All right, you're listening to a live broadcast. I'm Tom Rowe in Accra, and we've got a silent signal so far from the John L. Edwards School in Hudson, where the candidate forum is about to begin. And as soon as we get that signal up with sound, we'll be bringing you the candidate forum live with Steve Dunn and Tom DiPietro live from the school in just a second. So stay tuned as soon as we get that.
So close to each other, and one of the attractions for both Dan and I was that this is such a pedestrian-friendly city, and you can walk to so many places. And then, of course, the magnificent architecture, which we all want to preserve to the extent we can.
Thank you. Tom?
I fell in love with Hudson about 15 years ago, and took a little while to decide to buy a house here, but we did about 12 years ago. And early on, one of the attractions was not only the obvious attractions of Hudson, the architecture and all that, but also the notion that after a lifetime of being interested in politics, reading about politics, writing about politics, this community provided a chance to actually get involved. So one of the first things I did was I had a radio show, as Lynn can tell you, at WGXC. And it was a community affairs program where I got the opportunity to interview the then mayor, the chief of police, Rob Perry, head of DPW, a whole slew of people. And it was a basic education in how this city runs. But I still wasn't ready to get involved that deeply myself yet, because I felt you don't just come into a community and tell them how to change everything. You try to figure out what's going on there, how to become part of it, and how to reflect the views of everyone in the city, not just people like myself, who are, relatively new to the city. So that was part of the learning experience. And then I ran for this very office 2 years ago in what was kind of a hectic campaign. I ran as an independent because there were some difficulties trying to get the Democratic endorsement. And I wasn't disappointed in losing because I got to meet a lot of you. And I got to walk the city a lot. And I continued to walk the city a lot, because, as Steve mentioned, this is a very walkable city. And you get to meet a lot of people. And it's not inconceivable to meet 6,500 people, if that's what the actual, more or less. So that's kind of how I came to my initial involvement. And then the last mayor, Mayor Hallenbeck, appointed me to the planning board. And that was an interesting experience. Especially when I first got on, because I didn't, it was at that point controlled by, some of the more long-term residents of Hudson. But then the next mayor, Tiffany, made me the chair of the planning board. And that's been a sort of revelatory experience, because it means managing not just meetings, but certain issues that can be very contentious. And the experience there has been about learning how to create consensus. The initial board that I was handed, half of those members are gone. And I think they were a little hostile at first, but I think we grew to an understanding of how to work together and get things done. And I would continue that as Common Council Chair.
So for you both, what do you think Hudson's strengths are as the city currently exists, as we are right now, putting aside our beautiful natural environment, our very interesting walkable city, all those things, what are the greatest strengths of Hudson? Whoever wants to go first.
The level of community involvement is very strong. One thing I've learned by being chairman of the planning board puts me on a bunch of various other boards. For example, the Hudson Community Development Community and Development Planning Agency, the agenda of that board is to create housing. And you might say, well, why haven't you done anything? It's been a year and a half. What you learn being on that board is how difficult it is to get something like that done. But what I've also learned is how many people in this city really do want to get something done about it. So the question becomes, how do you make that happen? Because there are a lot of people, in this community really want to do things that help this community. I mean, it's phenomenal. And that, to me, is the strongest aspect of this city. I've seen it from all different parts of our community. And as you all know, we have a very diverse community. And they're all interested. They're all, you know, you mentioned you want to do something about housing, and suddenly everybody says, yes, please, let us be involved. And we'll talk about that more, I'm sure. But I have some very specific ideas on how to do that and how to get everybody involved, because there is the enthusiasm. People here want to be involved because they know they'll be listened to, at least now. Maybe it wasn't always the case, but your voices are always heard.
Steve?
In addition to what Tom said, which is so true, the strength of Hudson, why so many of us are here, is our very diversity. And it's a rare place these days, tragically, in the United States, that people of all races and classes and backgrounds live next door to each other on every block, and more so every day. And I see that in my canvassing. And there's so much talent in this city. Great artists, intellectuals. It's really amazing for a city of about 6,000 people, what we have here. And one of the goals I think both Tom and I share is how to use all that talent and goodwill. People, by and large, get along of all backgrounds. And that's very gratifying. And I found that canvassing as well. And one of the challenges is to make Hudson's governance work better, to be able to use all of that talent to start addressing some of these difficult issues that take a lot of work, a lot of strategy, and are difficult. And I think by doing that, we can begin to more effectively and rapidly start tackling some of these problems. Affordable housing, rising rents, all of these issues, the challenge of the Colarusso controversy, they're all out there. Our aging infrastructure, how to more effectively secure grants, these are all challenges where I think that we can do better. And I know I, no matter whether I win or lose, will help Tom and the new mayor and everybody else in any way that they let me or I can to help in that process. And I'm sure Tom feels the same way if the result is otherwise. So to me, that's the strength of Hudson. It's also, unlike its colorful history, I think, an honest city. I've detected no corruption in the city whatsoever, and that has not always been true, as we all know.
So down to governance, as you know, I'm very curious to know how you would conduct the business of Common Council President. You know, the Common Council does the people's work, and how or if that work gets done has a lot to do with the Common Council President. Maybe you could talk a little bit more about how you're going to tackle it all, what your priorities would be, even your day-to-day plan. Are you going to have an office in City Hall? You know, be there every day? You know, what kind of accessibility is there for people who want to come and see you? If you could both speak to that.
Sure. I guess it's my turn. There is an office of the Common Council President in City Hall, right next to the mayor's office and the assistant mayor. It's a bit smaller than those offices, but it is an office. And I recall when I first moved to Hudson, walking up there, and Don Moore was sitting in it, and I just walked right in. He invited me in, and we started talking, believe it or not, about the zoning code. So, and I'll be there, and my door will be open. When it comes to the Common Council President and how to conduct that job, an issue in the past has been that the council has often been unruly. So one of the jobs of the Common Council President is to enforce the rules. And in looking at those rules, one of which I noticed is a rule that council people are not supposed to personally attack one another. It's right in the rules. Only discuss issues, not personalities. And we all know that rule hasn't been followed very well. And I'm confident with the new council and new personalities that that probably will not be a problem. But if it is, it's the responsibility of the Common Council President to enforce the rules. And one power of the Common Council President is they can call a recess at any time. And if things get out of hand, I would do that. But the job is so much bigger than that, as Tom well knows as well. Common Council President appoints the members of all the committees, the chairman of the committees, and has the power in subcommittees to appoint private citizens. And one thing I think we really need to do is to harness some of the talent that's in the city and people who are interested to help these committees do their work, come up with ideas, do the necessary research, help contribute to drafting the legislation, and so forth. And then the Common Council President, in addition to that, is a member of the Board of Estimate and Apportionment and helps set the budget. And I think I have good skills there, having owned a business with somebody else and based on my Master's of Business Administration, I understand accounting. And then it's a matter of empowering the members of the council. And instead of folks working across purposes and attacking each other, what I would do in public and in private is help empower each and every one of the aldermen to accomplish their goals to the extent possible, suggest strategies for doing it, what research might be done, help draft the legislation, and then use the skills I've developed as an attorney to help fashion compromises that work for both sides. That's what attorneys do, whether it's settling litigation or helping to negotiate contracts. They're searching for compromises. And I think to the extent we can do that in a more effective way, where everybody gets a piece of the pie, where there's a transparent process and everyone understands what we're doing and why, that'll help bring the city together better. And the various factions and suspicions and so forth that are out there, they're fading now some, but we have some ways to go, could help be alleviated. And instead of having old Hudson and new Hudson and everything else, we can move towards the goal that our mayoral candidate has so eloquently advocated, one Hudson that works for all of us.
Tom, I know you've talked about wanting to make some changes in the committee structure.
Right. As Steve mentioned, 2 years ago I proposed and continue to propose adding non-voting members to every committee, because that's one of the functions of the Common Council President. What you see at the meetings is really just the tip of the iceberg. A lot goes on before a meeting, or should go on before a meeting, and that is setting the agenda, working with the committees to actually task the committees to accomplish something, to account for themselves at meetings, which they don't really do now. They used to even read the minutes of their previous meetings at meetings. None of that's been done for a while, and I'd like to see that come back. I'm not a lawyer. but I have been married to one for 39 years. I don't disapprove of lawyers, but you know, one of the problems on the council has been a lawyer. And I'm not, as I say, against lawyers, but lawyers tend to see things as a kind of top-down process. They think, you know, you just keep making new legislation and that's how you cure things. And they tend to complicate matters. I think we need to simplify our code, simplify our charter, and learn how to enforce what's actually there.
Yeah, and I think it's worth throwing this out that, you know, democracy, when it works, is not all flowers and sunshine. It's, you know, like watching sausage being made. So this idea that everybody has to get along in order to make forward progress is not always the way things work. I think it's a matter of having, if I can just editorialize here for a minute, civil discourse. You know, people being able to come to a place and have a conversation and be able to represent different points of view and then come to a place where we all agree on how we move forward. And that has not happened in the Common Council for a very long time.
Exactly. And Steve is right. I mean, there are things you can enforce. There are rules. There always have been rules. There's Robert's Rules of Order when there aren't the explicit rules set down by the Common Council president. I just want to point out that some of you may know that I was already endorsed by Republicans and conservatives, which is amazing to me because I'm neither. And the reason is because I made it clear to them that there was no litmus test to get those endorsements. By the way, I was also endorsed by the Working Families Party, but that did have a litmus test. But the other two parties really trusted that I would give them a place at the table, because that's what Lynn's really talking about here. It's just, you know, just the civility comes from respecting everyone equally, and at the same time realizing you're not always going to agree. I mean, I know that from the planning board quite well.
Did you have anything you wanted to add?
Yes, I think the point is, sure, there'll be disagreements, and some issue may be resolved in a way some disagree with, but if the process has been fair, everybody's had a chance to give their say, and if, and this may sound kind of strange, the side that has less expertise, perhaps, or less resources is helped to make the best possible case for their side that's possible, that will help level the playing field. And if you have a transparent process where everybody understands the competing considerations and how the decision was arrived at, and if you make a good faith effort to try to give the other side something, even if not everything they want, and you make that a point of view that you'll try to do wherever possible, that is going to help mitigate some of the conflict. And we haven't done a very good job of that. The transparency, I think, is lacking. Often bills are discussed by a number. They're not even described what they are. And that's not too helpful. I would say, yes, I am an attorney, but I'm committed that in the end, it's not so much what I want, it's what the aldermen want and what the city wants, and me helping to arrive at the decisions in a civil and respectful way where everybody gets a piece of the pie. It isn't about me, it's about Hudson. Sure, I have my ideas and my opinions and will give my advice, but in the end, the Common Council President should be a facilitator and an enabler and not somebody dictating from the top down or otherwise or dominating. And I promise you, I will never, ever do that. I'm not wired that way.
Can I follow up briefly?
Sure.
One of the things I've committed myself to, if I do become a Common Council President, now that we have fair and equal, thanks partly to Steve, I don't believe the Common Council President really should be one, should always vote on every issue. If the council can't arrive at least a 6-4 vote on its own, then that's, you know, there will be maybe ties, and that's when the Common Council President should step in. Of course, there are exceptions. There are certain amendments and rules that need three-quarters vote or two-thirds vote, and of course you'd have to vote in that situation. But in general, just to sort of assert that there is a more open and equal kind of experience in the council, the president should probably just run the meeting and make sure it's running fair, and then vote if he has to, or she.
Could I comment on that?
Sure, and then we're about down to 10 minutes left in this segment, so.
All right. This is one area where I respectfully disagree with Tom on. I think the Common Council President should vote, so everybody knows where the Common Council President stands. It's about accountability and voters knowing where you stand on an issue. Now, it may be how you vote is in part to help fashion a compromise, or because a majority of the council already favors one point of view and you want to go along with that, fine. But I'll be voting on every issue, maybe only after everybody else has voted, but I think it's a matter of accountability. So I understand Tom's point of view, but I respectfully disagree with him.
Okay, thank you. I think I'm going to do a speed round on these particular topics, and you can do a short answer as best you can. On the budget, can you name three things that you would do right now to change the budgetary process in the city to make it work better?
Yes, I tasked the committee. I mean, well, first of all, I'd expand that from the current board of just three people, to make that initial budgetary decision. And then once they've done it, there should be a longer time for that budget to be looked at. Right now, it's way too short. Mm-hmm. And no one, you know, and it's brought to the council, and all they get to do is to subtract. They can't add. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of things that need to be added, mm-hmm. like the youth center right now.
Just echoing what Tom said, but emphasizing, I favor an open budget process, so the community and the aldermen all know what the competing priorities are and how much money is available, because you can't do everything. There's so much here that's worthy of doing, but ultimately if you spend money on one thing, it'll mean less money on something else. And the community should understand what and how these things balance each other off. I think that's extremely important. And maybe Tom knows, but I don't really know much of what's in the budget because it simply isn't discussed. I know the police department costs a lot.
More than anything, it's hard to read.
A lot of the expenses
are hidden in various categories.
I don't know, there's areas we can do things more efficiently or not, but I think I have the skill set. I understand cost accounting and so forth to help do that. And the other thing is we need to try to find more revenue. The lodging tax is one source, but other than raising taxes here in Hudson, we need to try to find more revenue because we do have so many pressing problems.
Thank
we
you.
Kind of flunked the speed round.
Yeah, well, no, that, this is better. This is better. Okay, revitalization. Okay, say somebody, your Common Council President, and somebody hands you a, say, $10 million check and tells you that you can spend it on whatever the city needs. What would you do with it?
With mean without strings?
Without strings. Based on need, as you see it.
I would spend a fair amount on affordable housing. I would spend money hiring a full-time planning director to more effectively secure grants with more planning and more time and more disclosure. The DRI controversy about lack of transparency and so forth was because the process was so short. With a full-time planning director, that could have been worked on for the last year after we lost the first round. So I would spend money on that. Youth. You know, the recent shootings and all of those tragedies. When we have a police department, they're doing the best they can, and sometimes these things happen. But to the extent we can, through our youth programs and what the city does and fine organizations like Operation Unite and Promise Neighborhoods and Kite's Nest, those are all great programs that we should try to support. Plus what the library does. They have fantastic youth programs for tutoring, developing how to think like a programmer and develop computer skills, reading for the small children, Bangladeshi language and cultural program open to all. These are all ways to try to steer our youth, particularly at-risk youth, in a more positive direction. And to the extent some of them can be empowered to go in such a direction and know it's possible and real and given the tools, that will help with not only the safety of our city, but for them. And so that would be a top priority for me.
Tom?
I'm glad Steve, I agree with most of what Steve said, and I'm glad he mentioned the ESL program at the library, because I just finished my training to teach in the ESL program at the library. Youth programs, more specifically, well, first of all, the youth center, if anybody hasn't been there, you should go take a look. It's an abomination. It's in such terrible disrepair, and it could use a lot of money. But even more importantly, this summer, we had the odd situation where Nick Zakos, who's running the program right now, had to had to set up a GoFundMe, whatever it's called, a GoFundMe, to finance taking the kids to Zoom Flume, which they've done every year. They couldn't find in their budget, I think it was $1,500 to get the kids to Zoom Flume, even though it had been done every year previously. And that's the sort of commitment Nick has, that he did that. So obviously, that's a huge and high priority, along with housing, as Steve mentioned. And that's a whole other, that's not for a speed answer.
I know, that's a whole separate conversation. On law enforcement, you brought up law enforcement. I'd like to know your thoughts about the creation of a civilian review board or some sort of civilian oversight for the city police department.
Okay, do we need a civilian review board? I don't think so. I think, first of all, if we expand the police committee, that could function as a civilian review board, especially if we have people on that committee who represent the parts of the city that feel they're not being addressed by the police and the police situation. So, you know, I mean, if we were a bigger city, I'd probably be in favor of a civilian review board. Mm-hmm. But I think we're small enough that we, I'm not sure, and again, I'm open to the possibility.
I agree with Tom, in part because it depends on the circumstances. And I believe the circumstances are, in Hudson, we have an outstanding police chief, we have an excellent officer corps. While I've lived here, there really hasn't been a documented case of police misconduct, and so I don't see the need for that in the city. I think the leadership is good, and I respect the police, and I'm proud to be able to say that.
Okay, thank you both. I think we're going to take a short break before we move on to the audience questions. I, of course, had many, many, many more questions, so I'm hoping whoever's elected will be willing to come on the radio.
Absolutely.
Oh, is it?
All right, we're listening to a live candidate forum for Hudson Common Council president coming from the John L. Edwards School in Hudson.
We would like a couple more questions from the audience because quite a few of these have already been covered. So you may get your chance to ask a few more. So turn in your questions in the back, and we'll be ready in a couple of minutes.
So this is live from the John L. Edward Primary School in Hudson.
Yeah.
and we'll continue until about 7:30 p.m. If you're in Hudson, you can get over there, or you can continue to listen on the radio. We try to put candidate forums on as much as possible so that local voters have more information about their local candidates. This candidate forum is hosted by the Register Star, the Columbia County Chamber of Commerce, and the Hudson City Democrats. These two candidates are running for the Democratic nomination, so they're competing in the September 12th Democratic primary election. Tom DiPietro and Steve Dunn will answer questions submitted by audience members in the next part of the candidate forum. We are live. Acre, let's hear what the weather says.
Northwest winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Friday, sunny. Highs in the lower 60s. Northwest winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. And now the extended forecast.
If you have questions, please see the back table. There's a pencil and your paper there for you.
Lows in the mid-40s. Northwest winds 5 to 10 miles per hour in the evening, becoming light and variable. Saturday, mostly sunny. Highs in the lower 70s. Saturday night and Sunday, mostly cloudy with showers likely. Lows in the upper 50s. Highs in the lower 70s. Chance of rain 60%. Sunday night, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers in the evening, then partly cloudy after midnight. Lows in the upper 50s. Chance of rain 40%. Labor Day and Monday night, partly cloudy. Highs around 80. Lows around 60. Tuesday, partly sunny. A chance of showers in the afternoon. Highs in the lower 80s. Chance of rain 30%. Tuesday night, mostly cloudy with a 40% chance of showers. Lows in the lower 60s. Wednesday, mostly cloudy with a 50% chance of showers.
This is Tom Rowe back in the Acra studio. We're tuning in the John L. Edwards Primary School in Hudson, 360 State Street, if you want to get there in time before it ends at 7:30. We'll be live there. This broadcast is coming there with the Hudson Common Council President Candidate Forum between Steve Dunn and Tom DiPietro. They are the two Democrats competing in the September 12th Democratic primary election. The event is hosted by the Register Star, the Columbia County Chamber of Commerce, and the Hudson City Democrats. And for the next hour, Tom DiPietro and Steve Dunn will take questions submitted by audience members at the forum at the John L. Edwards Primary School, which will resume in just a moment. Sounds like we may be getting back to the candidate forum soon, the Hudson Common Council President Candidate Forum. The two candidates are running for the Hudson Common Council President in the September 12th Democratic primary election. They won't necessarily win the role of Hudson Common Council President September 12th. They'll just win the Democratic nomination and will be on the Democratic line in the November race. So that's what we're preparing for, a primary election September 12th. Two candidates are both on the Democratic line, and this is a candidate forum sponsored by the Register Star, the Columbia County Chamber of Commerce, and the Hudson City Democrats. So it's not all the candidates for Common Council in November here, just the two that are trying to be the one on the Democratic line. I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and we're listening for things to resume at the John L. Edwards Primary School in Hudson, 360 State Street. That's where our broadcast originates from this evening. In place of our regular All Together Now news show, we are tuning in the Hudson Common Council President Candidates Forum. Two candidates for the Democratic Party trying to get the Democratic line on the November ballot. And the two candidates are Tom DiPietro and Steve Dunn. We both heard them talk for about a half hour about different things queried by WGXC station manager and managing news editor Lynn Sloniker. So we'll see. It sounds like they're just about ready to begin. We're going to hear more questions from the audience members at the Hudson Common Council President Candidate Forum tonight in front of the September 12th Democratic primary election. And that is, of course, the Democratic primary election is in front of the full election in November. So it sounds like they're getting ready to begin with the questions at the candidate forum at the John L. Edwards Primary School in Hudson. I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, where we're standing by.
Yeah, you need to text him.
Ready for them to start, maybe there.
Volunteer to do that for us. Thank you so much, Kate.
All right. Well, you heard him there.
We can have everyone seated.
Going to start.
We'll get started with this round. And we're... So if you need to get back in, you need to knock upon your re-entry. I see some folks still coming in. I will allow them to be seated. But just for the sake of time, I'd like to remind you that we have modified the League of Women Voters format for this evening, for this particular debate. And the rules are pretty much the same as they were from the introductory session. We ask that the candidates be mindful of the time and respect each other's time and not to speak over each other. The next round questions are generated from our audience. So they've been very verbose in their questions. We have about 20 or so here, but hopefully we'll get done before the 11 o'clock hour with Brian Williams. So I'm going to ask a question, and then Mary's going to follow, and then Sarah, you have 2 minutes each to answer the question in a two-minute rebuttal time. Please see the young lady in the bright fuchsia dress for your 50-second and 30-second cues. If you notice that a question that you have written has not been asked, just be patient. We'll get to it again. There's quite a few here. And so I'm going to start off, and we're going to start with Tom, since you're to my immediate left, meaning that Steve, Mary will start with you, and we'll rotate that way. Got it?
Good. Thank you.
So, Tom, what are Hudson's top three infrastructure needs?
Affordable housing or repairing Bliss Towers and the sidewalks. Easy answer.
Steve? Steve, you have 2 minutes to rebut. You don't have to use all of it.
Well, I'm going to use my 2 minutes to discuss briefly how to actually accomplish this, or at least move towards accomplishing it.
Wasn't the question.
That's all right. I can use my 2 minutes as I think is productive and useful. On sidewalks, I know how dangerous they are and what disrepair they are, and that having private homeowners maintain them is not working. And I searched around and found the city of Ithaca that's had the city take over the sidewalk maintenance. Homeowners pay a small assessment fee each year, but they're no longer responsible for huge bills coming at one time to repair their sidewalks. And that program has proved to be very popular. In fact, people are agitating to increase their assessments. So that is one. And then on affordable housing, I've written legislation that's working its way through the process, and it will be on Tom's desk and the planning board's desk at their next meeting, which will help encourage the construction of more basement apartments and garage apartments, which would tend to be affordable by alleviating some of the parking requirements, up to one space per parcel. And then the other thing that I think we need to look at and restrict is the spread of Airbnbs, which are eating up affordable housing like Pac-Man. And I would suggest legislation to be considered that restricts the use of Airbnbs for non-owner-occupied parcels that are multifamily, which is about 30 buildings and 91 rooms. That's a lot.
Mary?
No,
you ceded your time. However, you may respond during your chance to rebut at the next question. Thank you.
Okay, Steve. What are your thoughts about developing the waterfront?
The waterfront is one of Hudson's greatest resources, and there is some controversy about how to use it, and that's one issue where I think it's important that everybody shares in that project with the DRI money and otherwise, that there not only be boating facilities and a dock and retail activity, but also mixed housing, including affordable housing, which, by the way, can be used with some of the DRI money. It's called transformative housing, which means affordable housing. And also training facilities. This is an idea that John Cain told me about. It's a great idea that you have maker facilities where people can go and learn how to use tools and make stuff, and supply libraries where they can borrow tools that they've been taught how to use for construction projects and otherwise. And one great unmet need in Hudson, where if individuals had the skill set, they could get high-paying jobs, is in construction. My contractor pays his people that have worked on a project for me $25 an hour. That's a pretty good wage. And he struggles finding people that can do the work the way he wants to do it. So that is a concrete, real example of what can be done with some of the waterfront.
Yeah, I'm a little confused because I'm not sure how many of those projects really relate to the waterfront. I can't imagine putting all those in a floodplain, for one thing. The waterfront is something we need to protect. We need to develop it slowly. We need to make sure that most of it is public access, because we already have given up too much of it in the past. I also want to debate. Steve does have an amendment proposal, and I have to say, you know, it's a good proposal if, you know, you want to live in a basement. And also, it does require, every proposal that may have an upside does often have a downside. And in this case, it means more cars on the street, because part of the proposal is to get rid of the one car per apartment dweller requirement in the zoning. So, you know, most of the city can't sustain that. We have enough cars on the street as it is. So, not to say it's a bad idea, but it's kind of a small idea. And I don't think restricting Airbnbs also will kind of achieve what we really need to achieve, and that is protecting the renters in this city. And that requires something far more developed, complex, and worth working on. And since I can talk about the waterfront, let me just say there's been proposals, and most of them have all these elaborate commercial ideas. I think we could sort of put those in the background and just make sure it's a good place that people can go and enjoy the water.
Thank you. Some of the questions have already been answered, so if you don't hear your question, we feel it was already asked, like priorities, a few things like that. Let's see. Here's a hot topic. Do you think the state truck route through Hudson needs to be relocated? If your answer is yes, how important is this issue to you, and how could this problem be tackled?
One thing I've talked about from the get-go here is not only the new housing committee, but also a new transportation committee. And I've talked about this with one of the already endorsed Democratic candidates, John Rosenthal, who's done lots of research into getting these trucks off our city streets. Now, can't promise getting every truck off the city street. And by the way, it's not just State Street. They're coming down in front of my house on the State Route 9. You can't get every truck off the street, but there are certain requirements that should be met. And if we enforce those rules, as I suggested earlier, sometimes you just have to enforce what's in play, we can get a lot of trucks off the street. It's crucial. It's just, it doesn't fit in with how our city's developing. You just have to be down near my end of town where they turn left from 9 to Warren and then go south on Park. And it's unbelievable. It holds up traffic. It's dangerous as can be. And then, of course, we have the problem on Columbian State, or Columbia, where they're coming down and threatening people who actually live on this block. So, yeah, we have to do something. There are things that can be done.
I think it's important to understand what Hudson can do and what it cannot do as a matter of law. The existing truck routes are state highways. They're controlled by the state. Hudson cannot interfere with truck traffic, including heavy trucks on those roads. Hudson could potentially change the routes, but I'm not sure we'd want to change it to Warren Street or State Street or some other street. It is true, Hudson can literally ban from every street other than the state highways heavy trucks from every one of its streets under state law. But trucks still have to make their pickups and deliveries, and that means going on other streets. So there's only so much we can do. One thing, however, that we can do is designate the route trucks take for their pickup and delivery points. And to just touch on the Colarusso matter briefly, if Colarusso promptly proceeds to build its road as it proposes from Newman Road to 9, I think Hudson probably would be able to direct those Colarusso trucks out of the city on the Causeway Road and not up Front Street and back down Columbia Street and Green Street, but rather have those trucks turn south, go to Highway 23 and make a left going up 9 to the new entrance to the Colarusso facility. So that would reduce a fair percentage of the trucks, and those are heavy trucks.
Thank you.
You're listening to WGXC Acre at 90.7.
How would you expand and improve economic opportunity? To what extent would you be willing to spend money on this? That's to you, Steve.
Thank you. Well, first, I already alluded to whether it's in the waterfront or elsewhere. Yes, it's a flood plain, but we're talking about building a lot of buildings there. So you just have to design them for that and have the mechanicals somewhere other than in the first floor and the basement. Part of the legislation that I drafted that will be at the planning board also has a component to allow for existing non-conforming uses in residential districts to change to another non-conforming use or revive if they ceased to have a non-conforming use and lost their grandfathering to start again, subject to planning board review, which would ascertain whether they thought it was a good thing or a bad thing for the neighborhood and the city. And I became acutely aware of this neighborhood with respect to a gentleman, Basil Nooks, who wanted to take what used to be a bar and was a problem and open a takeout food restaurant. And he cannot under the existing code, period, because it requires a use variance and he's not eligible for one. So that would create economic opportunity for Mr. Nooks, for those he employs, as well as a vital service for the neighborhood in the form of affordable food. So that's one area, and again, that particularly on the north side of the city, it will help facilitate economic opportunity.
If I might just take a privilege for the person's posing the question. If at some point you want the question repeated, please just say repeat the question. I'm sorry, Tom.
No, I remember it.
Okay.
Yeah, economic opportunity is crucial, and that's a nice thing to work for, to help Mr. Nooks get his restaurant. But again, I think these kind of small zoning changes, which may even seem a bit arcane to you, miss the larger picture. We need a vision of job opportunity here, and it begins with maker programs, it begins with making a better connection with the community college to train people for the jobs that are available here. And there are jobs available here, primarily in construction, in the hospitality realm. I hate to call it an industry. But there are jobs that go for, that people are looking for employees and not finding them because they're not properly trained. Now, there's always been a problem of getting people, students, to the community college. One thing we need to do is either bring some of the community college into the city or to make sure that they can get out there. I happen to know from Bill Hughes, the Fourth Ward supervisor, that now there's a program that's being paid for by Medicaid, I believe, that's going to have a bus system that goes from Philmont through the city out to the community college, and it's going to run frequently. So that's a great thing that's happening, because we have to get more access to the community college for our community. I think it was put out there in the first place almost as a slap in the face to Hudson.
Mary?
Okay, Tom. How do you fix the lack of transparency between the city politics and the community?
A lot of ways. It's funny, I was thinking a lot about this recently because someone suggested, for one thing, we could do a common council meeting just to live stream them. Not a hard concept, not hard to do. And this would allow people who, first of all, can't get into City Hall because it's not ADA compliant to watch a meeting live. That just makes the everyday process of the meetings open. But we need more than that. We need more sort of preparation to the meetings. You know, the informal meetings used to be far more rigorous and had put more online. I don't mean online in terms of the internet. Sorry, I still use online in a different sense because I'm old. Put more on the line ahead of time so that we know what's actually coming out, what you need to know to be informed when you actually witness one of the Common Council meetings. Other forms of transparency? Well, I was hoping to tell this story. Sydney Long, who's here somewhere, or was here, oh, there she is, complained to me about a planning board meeting that the problem was really simple. She couldn't hear what anybody was saying. And it inspired me to go over to Having, which is a local business, and they're developing a sound system that is portable and can be used both in City Hall, and if City Hall moves in the future, which it may, could be taken along with us. And that sound system will not only microphone all the committee members for any meeting that takes place, but it'll also have speakers in the hallway, because as we all know, when the meetings are crowded, people in the hallway can not only not hear, they cannot see. So one of the add-ons would be a screen above the entranceway to City Hall, you know, the main City Hall, where people in the hallway could actually see who's doing the talking. So that's transparency in a smaller way.
Thank you.
I think Tom made excellent points, and I agree with each and every one of them. So just to add a couple, I already mentioned open budgeting, because many of these decisions ultimately come down to money and priorities, and to the extent the community can be brought in to understand that process and have their say and understand how the decision is made, I think that would make a huge difference. The other thing, the current mayor had one town hall, and I think that was great, but I would promise you and commit to you that if I were Common Council President, I would set up town halls for people to come in and ask questions and discuss matters and invite the other council people to be there and to invite the mayor to be there and just have these gatherings where there can be an informal conversation and people can become more familiar with what we're doing and how we're doing it. I just want to say one thing about my legislation that Tom mentioned, which is it would exacerbate the parking problems. I don't think so, because most of those garage structures are not used now as garages. They're used as storage sheds. Many of them are wrecks. For them to have an apartment above them, they would have to become structurally sound, and they would actually park cars. So while you may have an extra garage apartment, which would generate the need for a space, you're actually picking up two spaces because you're using a garage again. So you're actually helping alleviate the parking problem, not exacerbate it.
Not sure how that works.
Thank you.
Okay. I'm actually really happy with this debate. It's wonderful to have two candidates like this who have really examined the city in depth and have wonderful ideas. So I'm really happy to have this confrontation here, or whatever. Lively discussion. Okay, here's one. Do you agree with the statement that we cannot do anything about gentrification?
Is that mine?
Well,
I'll take a crack at it. Again, just like with trucks, to overpromise and suggest we can do things we can't is counterproductive and leads to distrust. and gentrification, people wanting to live in Hudson, is a very powerful force. In fact, the gentleman I just met yesterday said he wants to sell his house in the country of Columbia County and move to Hudson. And he says, it's tough because everybody wants to move to Hudson. So that's a powerful force. But that doesn't mean we can't do nothing. There's stuff that we can do. We can secure more grants through a planning director that will help construct more affordable housing, and or grants which would make housing handicap friendly for those that have a disability and live in their housing, or refurbish houses that are in trouble, the road for which otherwise is somebody would buy them and make them into a not affordable dwelling. So they're, but and limiting the spread of Airbnbs. As I say, they've taken, with respect to the area I suggest that they be limited, 30 buildings out of the affordable housing market and 90 rooms. That's a lot of housing. So will that stop gentrification? No. But at the end of the day, at some point, there'll still be housing for people who don't have substantial means. And that's important if we want to have a diverse city, which is why so many have come here in the first place.
There's a lot we can do about gentrification. To begin with, we have to fix what we have, that we're renters who are subsidized or paying lower rents, have a building like Bliss Towers and the area next to it, the low rise. By fixing it, fix what we have. That protects over 130 families from being pushed out of this city. More importantly, in terms of gentrification, we need to protect these renters who are currently feel threatened by the rise of gentrification. And one way to do that, there's a book that just came out called Gentrifier. It's a sort of academic book. But what they suggest is a registry for people who feel threatened by what's happening with the rental situation. So that if you register and let them know that you feel that there's a chance that your house is either going to be sold out from under, that the house where you rent is going to be sold out from under you, or the apartment building where you rent is going to be sold out or remodeled for a higher price. The city knows, and the city helps you by either trying to find alternate housing for you, finding vouchers for you. There's all kinds of programs through the Department of Social Services, which is, of course, based here in Hudson. So I think there's a lot we can do. And, of course, limiting Airbnbs is a good idea. But I suspect most of those places that are now renovated for Airbnbs aren't going to be, you know, in the $600, $700 range or whatever people consider affordable these days. We need new housing. And that's a complex process, but not as complex as you might think. It's just a question of getting all the stakeholders involved from the get-go, from the mayor on down, from all the agencies involved, from all the people who feel threatened, the people who want to stay here, the people who have lived here all their lives.
This question is for you, Tom. How do you think the city should address the issue of parking?
So, when I start this committee, this transportation committee, they will be tasked also with dealing with parking. Now, there was a proposal to have people, had to do with the hospital and the problem up near the hospital where people are taking up the street parking who work in the hospital. Now, the proposal was to have people get parking tags. I think that would be a good idea for the entire city, so that every resident has a tag, so that you know it's a resident car as opposed to someone from outside the community. That's one way. Obviously, some way down the road, we might need more parking space. You know, one simple thing, by the way, and it's especially true on weekends, We need better signage telling people there's plenty of spaces off of Warren Street, because there are. And it wouldn't create the problem that weekends on Warren Street tends to be with parking. Beyond that, you know, I don't think we need huge parking garages. One level above a building sometimes does the trick.
I agree with some of Tom's comments, which I think are good ones. I would carefully study the idea, however, of reserving parking spots on the streets.
No, that's not what I said.
And if we could have the phones turned off, please, just to be respectful.
Well, irrespective of what Tom said and irrespective of whether I misunderstood it, to the extent residents have priority over others, you have an issue where people are going to park who visit, and you have an issue where people park who are visiting the city as tourists or otherwise. And maybe if we're going to go down this route, we do need some kind of parking structure. Down at the waterfront, that might be a good place for one, and then maybe have little shuttle services or so forth. But to just do it without being very careful about the consequences would be a concern of mine. One thing I learned in canvassing, and I have learned a couple of things in canvassing that I didn't think about, is if you're disabled, you should have a reserved spot in front of your house. I think that's an extremely good idea for those who have a disability. And I learned a couple of other things. Stop signs. I was under the impression that the Department of Transportation needed to approve stop signs. They don't. The city can put them up wherever they want without restriction. Another thing the city can do, and this is a problem on Oakwood where they're speeding, is lower the speed limit to 25 miles an hour and install speed humps. And I think those are ideas that should be explored.
Okay, Steve. What do you propose to do to increase pedestrian safety, i.e. sidewalks and traffic lights?
Well, we've already mentioned sidewalks. The city should take them over and fix them. They're dangerous. I know on the street I live, Robinson Street, the sidewalks are really dangerous. Thank heaven it's a quiet street, because the street serves as a sidewalk for its residents. That's not going to work on Union Street and some other streets. So that is a pressing problem. And that's why Mike O'Hara and I are working on legislation for the council and the mayor to consider to deal with that issue. I did mention stop signs, and they can be placed in certain places where they're desperately needed, like First and Union Street. And Robinson Street, the cars speed up the hill, and it's a blind intersection, and that's a problem. And then, unfortunately, the legislature has blocked cities reducing their speed limits from the default amount of 30 miles an hour. New York City used its political influence to change it to 25. Hudson only can do it on a selective basis. But we should do it where the need is most pressing, while trying to get the legislature to reduce the default speed limit. I know on most streets in Hudson, I don't think it's safe to go more than 20 miles an hour, much less 30 miles an hour. And legislation was passed by the state senate dropping the speed limit to 25, and it was killed in the assembly. And so one thing I suggest we all do is call up Dee Dee Barrett's office and find out what happened in the assembly and how we can make things happen in the next session.
None of those are bad ideas. And there are some very specific small things that need to be done. Everyone's noticed the constant or repeated accidents at the corner of Warren and Fourth. It has to do, apparently, it seems, because the stop signs, I don't mean the stop signs, stop lights are different on, actually, let me rephrase that, on Third also and Warren, both Third and Fourth. Half of Warren Street has overhead hanging stop lights, and then suddenly you have stop lights on the side of the street. It's very confusing. People coming from one direction are used to looking above them, then suddenly have to look at the side, and they miss it. But a more sort of threatening aspect to pedestrian safety in the city involves the trucks. Trucks barreling down Columbia Street. It's an accident waiting to happen, and it'll be a wake-up call to the state. Steve tells us about what you can do. I think there's a lot you can do if you petition the state, if you make it clear to the state the threat that it poses to everyday life. Same thing at the Front Street, the Broad Street crossover at the train station. There has been an accident there, and there's probably going to be more. And it would be terrible if that's how something finally gets done.
Thank you. We have one question here. I'm not sure that this really is in your bailiwick, but if you don't want to answer it, we could move on to something else. But do you think Hudson gets a fair share of the sales tax from the county? We got an answer.
We'd all like to know. And I have to say, Steve has taken an initiative in this regard, and I think that's really something great that he will do. It's not necessarily something the Common Council President should be doing, but it's an important thing because obviously we don't seem to be getting our fair share. And it's determined by the county, for those who don't know. It's apportioned by zip codes. And of course, you probably all know we share our zip code with a lot of the surrounding communities. So not only does the county get to decide who gets what, but the way it's sort of apportioned is by confusing us with Greenport, Livingston, parts of Claverack. And of course, Greenport does bring in a lot of revenue, so it would be nice to figure out who's actually bringing in all this revenue, this sales tax revenue, which would be an increased income stream for the city. It's a no-brainer, and I hope Steve continues to work on it.
First, as to what a Common Council President should or should not be doing, my thought is what people should be doing is what is most important to do and where they have the skill set to do that. And the Common Council President and the Alderman and the Mayor all work together and divide up tasks, and we work as a team together to try to accomplish what's important to accomplish in the city of Hudson. And that's what I've done on issues where I thought I could make a contribution without any title at all. I just showed up. Half of life is just showing up. On the sales tax, it's a very, very complicated issue. You have to understand how and why, who pays it where, and then you need to get the database as to how much activity is when the city is within the city limits of Hudson and how much is not. And that's hard to come by. And I'm still working with the Census Bureau to fix their data, which is an error, and also with a proprietary firm where I purchased at my own expense some data, and it was an error, and I'm working with them to fix it. But I think some money is there, whether it's $200,000 a year or $500,000, I don't know. Thank heavens the city of Saratoga Springs went through this process 15 years ago. KPMG did a study that reveals the methodology of how to do it. And what we're talking about is cities have the power to preempt out of the sales tax pool of the city, And when they do, they get a much larger share of the revenue, and you balance that against what the county's already paying to the city for not preempting out, which is currently about $300,000 a year. So it's an arithmetic task and a complicated one, but it's something we need to track.
Thank you.
Audience, how are we doing with time? You still awoke and still interested? All right, we have a few more questions. Several of them are about affordable housing, and we think it might be better if we close with that so people get a better understanding of where each particular candidate stands on that issue. So I'm going to read the last question for this round. Is that okay? It's your time, audience, so I guess the question is posed to you. Okay, this question goes to, I think, Tom, you got the last one, so this starts with Steve. What do you plan to do with the local, in parentheses, Hudson zoning code? It's a loaded one, too.
Well, when I first moved to Hudson, I was exposed to the zoning code and learned what an inappropriate code it is for Hudson. I found out later it was sold to Hudson in 1973 by a consultant who was hustling all of these cities, that, and Hudson was in some ways perhaps a more naive place than now, and they bought a zoning code that was suitable for a suburb, not a densely packed city. So it's a mess, and it's a huge task to fix, and I thought that's how I'd spend my first 2 years in Hudson, was trying to write up a code and give the options to the city to consider and so on and so forth. And then I got deflected by the Fair and Equal campaign and weighted voting, and that took up about 18 months of my time. So that's a big task. It needs to be done. Parking and how to handle that will be an issue, some controversy. But in the meantime, we can make fixes now, and to wait until we get a new zoning code, which might take 2 or 3 years, is putting the perfect above the good, and the perfect being the enemy of the good. And that's why some of these amendments that I have written and hope will be passed to help alleviate areas where it's causing a lack of economic opportunity. Urban planners say cities should be mixed use rather than large zones of only one use, you know, with apartments above shops and so forth. Restoring how cities used to be in the past until urban planners thought better and messed things up is something that we need to do.
From the moment I was on the planning board, one of the first things I realized is how difficult the zoning code is here, preventing things that seem obviously should be allowed. We have arcane rules about how many parking spaces are needed for restaurants. At the same time, I've advocated for a complete overhaul of the zoning. And as Steve said, we do need a full-time planner. And one of the first things that planner should be tasked with is rewriting the zoning code. Newburgh has done it. Other cities along the Hudson have done it. Cities in comparable size, comparable issues. It's not inconceivable to get a new code. And we're at that point right now.
Well, that concludes this portion of the debate. We want to...
There's more?
There's more. I would like to congratulate both of the candidates for one being very clear and precise about your individual proposals. I think at least from one host's perspective, that the audience has gotten an opportunity to hear a lot from you and can form better, make an educated decision on election day. So we want to thank you for that.
Thank you.
And at this time, I'll turn it over to Mary, who will sort of pull those four or five questions related to affordable housing into the final question for this debate, and hopefully we'll glean a lot from that. So at this time, Mary.
Thank you. Now, because there are a number of questions here, you can take 3 minutes instead of the normal two. How do you define affordable housing, and how should the city involve itself in financing it? Do you support rent control of a city? Do you support rent control? How do you propose to develop more affordable low-income housing, and would you prefer it to be from city government or private development? And ask me if you want me to repeat anything.
No, that's fine. I've been thinking a lot about this ever since I became a member of the HCDPA. And as I told you, I mentioned earlier, it's an agency tasked with creating more housing, but we haven't done it. Because one of the things I realized from being on that board is that you have to begin with a lot of stakeholders involved. It can't be just one agency that has no, may have a mission, but no exceptional authority to create affordable housing. So what I did was let me give you another anecdote. HCDPA had community housing resources come in recently, and they're developing a housing study for the city of Hudson. They're going to do a complete evaluation. Meanwhile, in conversation with Bill Hughes, I found out that the county is also doing a housing assessment for the county. That includes Hudson. So here you have two different groups tasked with coming up with reports. No one, however, is really in a position to take those two reports and come up with a real solution for creating housing. I mentioned earlier, we need a task force, and it would include people from all these agencies. I've also talked to the Albany Land Trust Bank, my niece who works for Equity Trust in Massachusetts, and her advice, they finance a lot of land trust and community housing projects. And her advice was crucial, because her point was, if you get all the stakeholders involved from the get-go, it can really happen. That means from the mayor all the way down. Mayor to those renters who need that housing. Bring them all in as part of this task force and create a plan for a land trust. Now, land trust, if you're not familiar, means the city would probably, or the city or the agency or the trust would own the building, but the renters would have a stake in their apartments. They would eventually own their apartments based on what they could afford. And the city or the trust retains ownership so that they control, you know, that you can't suddenly sell it for a lot more money than you've put into it. But it preserves your right to stay in that apartment. That's the kind of affordable housing project we desperately need. And I think it's really doable. But it does mean bringing all these agencies, all these stakeholders, and those affected most of all, to the table at once.
Thank you.
I think Tom's idea of a task force is a good one. Sometimes it's a dodge of a politician to say, I'll create a committee or task force, but I think in this case, the way he stated it, it certainly has the potential for being productive, and I think he described very well how a land trust works. But we've got two issues. One, Hudson has very little vacant land left. There's one parcel next to the fire station that has some potential, and then we have some area on the waterfront that Tom describes as a flood zone. So ultimately, it's about funding of land trusts or otherwise getting grants, because the city doesn't have the money. And that's why with a planning director and so forth, trying to get those grants in a systematic manner, wherever we can get them, with a priority on affordable housing where there's a conflict, I think is crucial. And those grants do things like refurbish buildings so people can stay in them and make houses accessible for the handicapped. There's all kinds of different buildings. They can buy buildings, but you got to get the grants to do it. One thing Tom didn't answer, but I'll answer because it was asked, and that's about rent control. And I don't favor rent control because in the long term what happens is it makes housing even more expensive for newcomers as people who now live in housing that's being rented way below market hold it for dear life. There's all kinds of law practices in New York that have been formed over the rent control properties there. And so at the end of the day, it can really hurt a city and actually force up rents except for those who are long-term residents. And I think hurt the economy of the city. It's sort of a short-term solution that'll cost the city in the long term, and I think it's extremely unwise. And if I lose votes saying what I just said, so be it. It's what I believe, and I would urge that it not be done. But again, it's up to the city. If that's what the city wants to do, I would help it fashion a law that does the least damage. But I think it's very unwise.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. We're now going to, they have 1 minute for a closing statement, and we're going to toss a coin as to who goes first. And here's our coin tosser. Okay. Wow. Heads.
Okay. First of all, I want to clear up one thing. I think we have different ideas about what the waterfront actually means. I'm talking about the land west of the train tracks. Certainly, other parts of the development that are in play for the DRI are possible for housing. I just wanted to clear that up. Mostly, what I want to make clear is that I'm accessible. If you look at the card that I put on your chair, that's my real phone number. It's my real email address, and you can reach me anytime if you don't see me in the street. And as probably some of you might wonder what I'm doing out there all the time, but I do walk the streets quite a bit because I love Hudson. And I've never felt more at home anywhere, frankly, in my life. It's been a great opportunity, and you know, if I'm not elected, that's fine too. I'll continue to serve in some capacity. But I really want to thank you all for coming out. And give me a call. Check out my Facebook page. Email me. Anything. Thank you.
First, I'd like to thank Tom for being willing to have this debate. I think we've had a good discussion. I think it's been very productive in the sense we've gotten to know each other better and share ideas together, and I think that's good for the city. I'd like to thank our hosts, Sarah and Jeff and Mary, for sponsoring this debate, and Lynn for all her excellent and probing questions, and the audience for your probing questions. As I said, I love Hudson. It's a place that's given me meaning and satisfaction in a way I've never had before in my life. And I want to serve it and use my skills to serve it. I think I have the temperament, the patience, the calmness. I think I am accessible. It's hard to believe, but in that role, I would be humble. It's not about me, it's about Hudson and trying to empower people to achieve their own goals so we can work together productively and all lead better lives in a better city. Thank you so much for coming. It's been an honor.
Thank you once again. We'd like to thank Lynn, the WGXC staff for the I'm sorry?
Alana Metlock.
We'd like to thank Sarah Sterling from Hudson's Democratic Party for their participation, as well as Mary Dempsey from the Register Star, Columbia Green Media. And again, I'm Jeffrey Hunt, representing the Columbia County Chamber of Commerce. Thank you so much for coming out this evening. Hopefully you'll have...